Hi, I'm Josh. And look, before we get too far into the show, I have to tell you that it absolutely should not be the mortuary assistant. It should be the mortician's assistant. She's not assisting the building. The building is not doing any autopsies. It's the mortician. This is mortician erasure.
It's pronounced chimera, but go on.
Technically, it's catchy.
Oh, you're clearing the
douche
out of your throat?
I was sipping my water, you brick.
Hey, I'm Matt, and one of us has to make a Bone Temple joke, right?
I mean, it's required by law, yeah.
Yeah, so like...
Vas-y le bon temple relou.
Wait, are we doing a crossover with the boys? I'm into that. All right, tell you what. Hey, I'm Matt, and you know what would make the Bone Temple maybe just a little bit more splatterific? If it had Frenchie from The Boys also exploding people while they're being skinned.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that works. That all checks out. This is Charlie and Austin. I couldn't help but with the title Thrash, I couldn't help but think, but like when we were kids and like getting your hands on like a skate magazine or like a punk magazine or a metal magazine or whatever, it was like always the thing, like or a porn magazine if you get your hands on it in a small town. But anything, any of that,
you had to have woods by you to find a porn.
You had to have woods nearby and transients and hobos and stuff. But regardless, you know, getting your hands on one of those magazines, you're always like, oh, this is the fuck, it's the coolest thing, the coolest shit in there, blah, 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 blah. And you get older and you learn more about the publishing industry, you learn more about all these people. And everybody publishing Thrasher and Metal Edge and all these other things when we were kids are a bunch of fucking nerds. Like they were, none of these guys were like, they weren't being radical in their office in Van Nuys. Like it just, it was, you know, it's just a bunch of fucking nerds.
You don't think there was a vert ramp in the break room?
Absolutely not. I think they got real excited about cake. And you know, like it just sort of, it's just a bunch of fucking squares. And it's like, and that's just one of those things, like of all the things that like break down your sort of childhood sort of enjoyment of things, like just learning that, like, it's just all of them were, it was just a business. Like that's all it was. Like,
you heard it here first, folks. Maximum Rock and Roll is the first podcast.
Oh, Maximum Rock and Roll. I still have one in one of my boxes. I couldn't dare to get rid of it. I couldn't do it. I was like, nope. There's like some long form interview with some like female punk band in there. It's like, it was just, I couldn't get rid of it. I'm like, I don't know why I'm keeping this newsprint thing still, but I still have it.
And we actually are being interviewed in the latest edition of Tiger Beat, and we are Harsh a Hot Dog. So first up, we have a short called Diavolo or El Diablo or the Devil.
So before we even learned, because I didn't get a chance to find out anything about this one, I watched this through, and then it was like, and my brain first off was like, is this associated with some kind of property I don't know? And then the second thought was, is this associated with like a video game thing that I don't know? And when my third thought was like, I made myself giggle like an idiot. Was like, I was like, ah, it's this weird cutscene they never used in a roller coaster tycoon.
Yes.
I was like, thanks,
okay, you're like,
hold on,
literally about half right.
Jesus Christ.
So here's the thing. To skip ahead to where I normally explain why I pick a thing, but I usually do that after I hear what you think. Let me tell you why I picked this thing, because I think it's fascinating. So this thing is, I think, interesting. It's a not particularly different necessarily like story from what you might have heard, right? So medieval times, plague, you know, weird things going on. And it looks a little weird, right? The animation's rough.
It feels like a Love, Death, and Robots kind of guy.
Right. Love, Death, and Robots, or honestly, my first thought was like, wait, is this just some AI bullshit? Right? Because it's not fully animated. And so what I discovered, and I meant to clue you guys in on, is that what this is like a proof of concept made by a company that is concept artists for Hollywood and for video games. And so what you're watching is sort of what they might present to someone so that that person can kind of like go, okay, you grok what we're going for here, right? So this is sort of a like an example of like the kind of thing they can do. And so like there is also a like 10-minute video of like showing how they made this and interviews with the crew and cast involved, and it's fascinating.
I'm gonna have to watch
but that. I watched like that kind of making up tutorial thing, and the part that I thought was fascinating is that like when you watch this, there's it's a very realized world while not being the most realized story. And the way the guy explained it made that suddenly come into sharp relief for me. And I thought, like, I don't know. I like different angles on filmmaking. So he talks about how, okay, they're concept artists, right? And he said, so think of it this way. If you're playing a game, right? Video games have, or movies, have infinite wind because it looks cool. And like, we're all indoor kids and we might not know any better. So like, but in reality, what you get is like, yeah, there's an occasional gust of wind that'll move a branch. And like, sometimes a leaf will plop to the ground every minute or so. And that's all very like difficult and expensive to animate unless you're The Last of Us with their budget, which is a game they did the concept art for. and he goes, and that's not our purview. We're just concept artists. We're not going to do anything moving, but it's our responsibility to be the one that pays the most attention. And that, to me, made this make more sense. Where when you watch the things that you can go, wow, that's interesting, or like that's creative, or that's a slightly more, I don't know, like granular moment than you might see, I think speaks to the perspective and the goal that they're coming at this from, as opposed to someone who might just be the writer, director, actor, whatever. And so to me, realizing only after the fact that that was also part of it made this even more interesting in retrospect. I do think it stands on its own, but that was part of what I thought was fascinating. And like I said, I meant to tell you guys that and I forgot.
That's so interesting. So,
anyway,
I do think that it stands kind of on its own. I wish that it had done just a beat or two more at the end.
Yeah.
Because it does just have the like, pillar of souls rising to heaven, and then maybe she can beat back the thing. Maybe she has the power of faith, and then it's over, right? Like when George Michaels has blue balls yet again. So, but I actually like the look of this from the get-go. It's unusual looking, like it's not quite that Love, Death, and Robots style, but it's close. Like if there was a Love, Death, and Robots game, it would be this, because this looks very Unity, like rendered in Unity kind of thing. But I like the way that it looked, and I thought they did some interesting things with the storytelling. It just ends up being not a story and more a vibe.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it, Joshua.
Because like, yeah, it's this, and I'm glad you mentioned about the details, Matt. Because like, there's a couple shots where, like, there's a, where she's like becoming more frantic, and the guy walks by, and he's just sort of like, oh yeah, your guy is like dead or worse, or whatever. He kind of like, he spills a little bit, and like he smirks, but only like one part of his face is working because you get this wound on the other side, which obviously has fucked up a bunch of nerves, and so like he kind of smirks with one eye and a third of the face, and it's like, whoa, that's a neat little detail.
And it's just
like,
yeah,
there was some like, stuff like that where like, whoa, that's kind of
It exists purely to exist, I think, right? And like, there's something about that that speaks to me, I guess, as a form of art, where like, this is just you putting a few little shining diamonds out there, and like, they don't need to add up to much, but they mean something to you who created this. And maybe I'm wrong, but like, I guess that's the vibe I get. And like, I don't know, something about that. I don't know. Maybe that's just kind of a hopeful thing. It's just like watching people do stuff because they're good at it and they like it.
Yeah, no, I think there's something to that. It's sort of like, and I'm glad to know that I didn't really have much of a thought that it was like a bunch of stupid AI nonsense. But I'm glad to know that it was like, it definitely came from like a cadre of actual artists.
Yes. Yep.
Like that's always like, that is becoming increasingly important to me.
Well, it's the kind of like thing everything. That, yeah, if you're just kind of randomly looking for shorts on YouTube, more so YouTube than like Vimeo or Shorts Weekly or a lot of the other places, but like you do start running into just things that are fully AI generated. By the way, when I went to see, what was one of the movies? Was it Exit 8 maybe? Had a commercial before it in the theater that was 100% just AI generated for like a window company. Yes. It was the scariest thing I saw over the course of those 2 hours. Cause like, it's just non-humans doing horrible things. And I'm like, oh no. Like we're at the point now where not only do I have to watch shitty ads before a movie, but I have to watch AI generated ads before a movie. So by the way, Exit 8's really good.
Yeah, I was very jealous. I got to see that. I was like, oh,
it was. I had one day. Like, I literally saw the showing.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
One
that
of
was
those.
The problem. We had, I think we had like three or four over like a course of like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then that was it. I was like, God damn it!
We could all see it at some point. I think it would be fun to talk about because it is such a weird beast. I'm sure it'll hit streaming at some point here where we could maybe do that. But yeah, that would be
yeah for sure. No, I'm glad you got a chance to see the theater. But I was definitely like, oh man,
yeah,
it's just like it's tricky to do.
That was one of those I guess I'll get 2 hours of sleep tonight because otherwise I'll never see this. Yeah.
The when you said the thing about the AI commercial during the Winter Olympics here, one of the ambulance chaser types had these series of AI commercials where it was like him on like a bobsled and like him on a skiing thing and whatever. And it's like, and he's a creepy motherfucker to begin with looking.
Well,
and
yeah.
Then like you then feed it into this AI machine and it's just like, it's just, it makes you want to just take a shower. It's just like, ugh, so gross.
You do kind of wonder, like, did you watch this before you put it out? Like, before you made it, did you think this is what I want people to associate me with?
I have to assume.
Too cheap to like hire an actor. You know,
yeah, I have to assume if you're the guy that does that, you are so high on the smell of your own farts, right? That like you just,
this will
like,
be hilarious.
Yes, this is perfect. This is exactly my vision because no one could say no because it was all computer generated. All right, bud. Like, give enough rope.
It made me think of a super, super fast digression, and then we'll get back to what we're supposed to do. It reminded me of
the super fast digression.
There's a micro machines. I heard the story on. I think it was on NPR like a year ago, or it was on one of those. I don't have the ability to remember where the hell it was. But anyway, long story short, it was this guy doing a story about a local car dealership and how the local car dealership always had these like wacky commercials. And it was like, you know, like he's dressed up in a pickle outfit, like, oh, you're going to put me in the brine for, you know, giving you a deal on his cars and that kind of stuff, or like all these kind of wacky, silly kind of things. And then he was like, it was just like this thing that local car dealerships. And then he was traveling somewhere, and then he was somewhere several states away and saw a TV commercial with a local car dealership doing the same stupid hackneyed joke thing
right
in their commercial. And he's like, what's the deal with this? That seems weird. And he started researching it, and basically there's these ad agency people that work with car dealerships where they sell them a package of scripts and sets and costumes and things to like put together these ad campaigns.
Oh, so he thought he had like an original idea?
No. Like, this is just a journalist guy. And he was like,
he
saw this commercial on TV and like, oh, some like, you know, little, where he lived, this dealership would have always like kind of wacky, gimmicky commercials. And then he was traveling and then saw a commercial in another state for another car dealership with the same shtick. He started researching and found out that there's these ad agencies that set up these car dealerships with these like packages of these wacky ads. And this goes back 20, 30 years or more.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like,
yeah, that's here.
Yeah. Well, and that's like every major or semi-major city. Like, do you guys, like, wherever you grew up, like, there was a guy that did local commercials, right?
Oh, yeah.
So in Minneapolis, it's Fancy Ray, right? And so, like, essentially the same script, but Fancy Ray just shows up. And if it's your car dealership, your sex toy shop, your strip club, your bar, you essentially just get Fancy Ray. And he's rad. He's a good dude.
Yeah, it's like Jim Varney kind of.
Yeah, like a Jim Varney type thing. So like, yeah, it just feels like those kind of car things sort of feel like that same idea, right? Just like, yeah, for some reason, I guess in the 80s, early 90s, every car dealership, the salesman acted like the owner was going to kill him for selling cars too cheaply.
Yeah.
And like, we all were just like, yes, that sounds right. Like, yeah, what?
That checks out.
Right, it's up there with the like, premise. I must be crazy with these prices.
Why wouldn't
somebody
they just
should lock
fire
me
you?
Up?
Yeah. But it's like, but so when you do the AI thing, it just made me think of that, the story this guy told about this, learning about these companies that sell these packages at these car dealerships, because it was like every one of these car dealerships, they couldn't find a single creative person that could come up with a bunch of silly ideas, or they never bothered to. But like, oh, we have no creative identity whatsoever.
No one had a solid teen at home.
Yeah, just nothing. And it was like they bought this package of them. And so I think about this ambulance chasers AI commercial. I was like, well, of course, because they're not going to have anybody in their universe that has ever had a creative thought, has ever shot a film in their backyard or painted a painting or anything. And well, it was sort of like
anyone with a modicum of sense, modicum of sense. Monica. Anyone with a Monica of sense, I'm more of a Rachel, but that's fine. Anyone with a Phoebe of sense would know that you would not want to be associated with said used car salesman, so they wouldn't be, I hear typing, am I an episode title?
Of course. I have my quiet keyboard now, though.
Okay. This is how the sausage gets made. I think you were taken
for a ride, my friend.
Well, compared to this one.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
you gotta establish dominance.
Oh, God. Make quarter your bitch, kids. My safe word is the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. I'm hearing a lot
Mine is, what's the other one? Sphinx of Quartz endorse my vow or something like that. Just another.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What's the one that Mark LaWare
is? Apparently it's Horseshoe Hot Dog After Dark today.
the one I always think of with that kind of stuff is I think of a guy that I grew up with. I still see updates from time to time every once in a while. He was from Jupiter. His name is Mark LaWare. And I remember him in some kind of state of inebriation of various things. We're talking about something school related, whatever else. And he said something to the effect of, "Oh, it's the thing of the King Philip came over to fuck my soup."
Okay.
A
little Papas Locas for everybody.
King Philip came over to fuck my soup sounds like a mnemonic for something.
Yeah.
And now you know the E flat scale.
Getting that S on any instrument besides the florpophone is very difficult.
It's a very weird way to remember the book of the Bible.
Anyway. Listen. It's either me or my glass harmonica, but it ain't both. Like what?
God.
You should probably. Well, some say the glass harmonica is half full, and.
And the others go, huh? So. Yeah,
and John Popper just goes, dude, I would break that thing so fast.
Oh, so fast.
It'd be halfway through the runaround. And it would be, tragic. Please stay tuned for more of hard hitting Blues Traveler jokes.
Well, the hook brings you back, right?
On that, sir, you can rely.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So you should watch that thing. It's a fun thing. It's a good thing. You watch the thing. It's fine.
Yeah.
That's so we're done.
I think it's cool.
Let's hop in then and talk about 28 years later, the Bone Temple, or 28 años después, el Templo de Huesos. Yep. I should start by saying that I didn't take much to 28 years later, and
on record as hating it.
And I think it's just because it felt very incomplete. And I still don't think that it's a good excuse to say, well, it's going to be a trilogy. It's like, this is not Lord of the Rings. You have to find an ending and make one. Like Star Wars had an ending. Even Empire Strikes Back has an ending. Yeah. And the first one just kind of felt like it suffered from trying to set up too many movies at once, and especially giving us that opening scene with like Jimmy's dad, and then the closing scene where Jimmy like drops down and does Power Rangers shit for no reason.
Hell yeah.
So, excuse me, I was a little biased coming into this. I like Nia DaCosta as a director, and I like half of this movie. And I'm still trying to unpack
if I remember right
from our
text chain, you were down with Samson and Ralph Fiennes, right? But you were less into anything with the Jimmies.
Yeah, I cannot. So for one, I didn't like the character. I didn't think it quite fit, even in the first one. It works a little better here. But I'm sorry, what?
The Jimmy character?
Yeah, Jimmy.
Yeah, okay.
Jimmy.
Like God, damn it.
I didn't like
this. I'm glad you guys wrote that too.
I know. I broke the seal. I'm sorry.
Get that cow. You broke the seal. or. Anyway,
club.
Baby, I can pay you to a kids film. Anyway,
franchise killer.
Yeah, talking about. So, yeah, I didn't like the Jimmy thing in the first one. In the second one, it's just one, like, yes, okay. I guess if the one side is like trying to find the humanity in the creature, then the other half is trying to find the creature in the human, right? And showing us just how, you know, man is the true evil. And we get that with the subtle push of a literal devil worshiper who literally skins people alive because daddy didn't hug me, but also the devil. And I was not having that. And I think it's partly because I just really hate the like strangers kind of movie, the funny games kind of movie, like Clockwork Orange, like Droog scene kind of movie. Mm. And so it was easy to apply that to the rest of it, to just like, God, I hate this fucker. And every time we're spending time with him, we could be spending more time with Samson and Doc.
This is really
like in at the end and fuck
Charlie. I want to hear
all this bullshit.
Yeah, Charlie, I want to hear what you think too before I chime in here, because I want to know where everybody stands.
So I'll explain why I'm asking. Matt, did you make it to the? Pardon me. Did you make it to the end of Walking Dead after I badgered you about it for a while? Okay, so you know that like after like 8.5 into 9 to the end is like just fucking rules. Like it's just really so goddamn good. But like, I was thinking about this with the Jimmys, that whole thing, and I was thinking about the Whisperers and about the Reavers and like these kind of character arcs in Walking Dead, and I was thinking like, when you introduced the Whisperers, if you spent a third of the season with none of our people, and it was just the Whisperers, at a certain point you'd be like, just fucking talk like people, you fucking weirdos. Like, I'm tired of your bullshit. Like, I just want some like connection to reality. And so I kept thinking about that in relation to this, because it was like the way that the Whisperers work, so especially early on, so goddamn well in Walking Dead, is you're just like, I don't know what the thing is. Like, I just like, God, this is it's really something else. But in this, like the Jimmy's thing, it's just, it becomes like this thing of being like, it becomes like a home invasion type of a vibe a lot of the time. And then about halfway through their whole bit with the whole part of it, I kind of got to the point where I was like, this is just somebody who's treated poorly. It's a bully. And it's sort of like, and it's just taken to an extreme direction. And yeah, sometimes that kind of sadist kind of thing can be interesting. I mean, there's sometimes you can have some interesting stuff with that, but like it just goes on and on and on and on. And it's like, and it's sort of like when you have Ralph Fiennes in the movie and you don't have him on screen, that means you're doing something wrong. Cause like that motherfucker can act the living shit out of anything. He's incredible, that man. And so
he's the anchor of the current trilogy, assuming they make it to a third. Yeah.
Well, that's my biggest takeaway is that it's upsetting. Cause it's like when he's on there and doing stuff, it's like, he just is magnetic. And so when you're faced with this kind of existential sort of threat with the Jimmy's thing, it just sort of becomes like, okay, what is the more interesting thing? And in the back of my mind, I kept going like, well, the more interesting thing is the fucking zombies. golly.
So, in brief, do we just have to acknowledge that we've lost the battle, that in general, zombie movies are no longer about zombies? Mm. It's just always about people now. Yeah. Like,
well, I mean, it's again, but that can be okay. I mean, it's one of the things that, like,
yeah, it's not the worst thing, but I would prefer if it wasn't the only thing. It's like, you know what's even scarier than monsters? Like, what? Your neighbors. Man. And it's like, yeah, okay, cool. Like, Romero taught us that. But, like,
yeah, it's kind of like the people who are still going, you know how the suburbs look all nice and neat and clean, manicured lawns? Guess what, buddy?
Boy, I spend more time on YouTube than I ever would have predicted. And the number of people that are, I guess, unaware that the majority of us didn't think the Blair Witch was real at the time it came out is astonishing. Yeah, like, no, look up any article or video or anything, and they're like, and everyone thought this was real. And I'm like, no one thought that was real. Like, that one dumb girl in my class, she thought it was real. We told her she was dumb. Like, that's, you know, so like, it's watching these things get like rediscovered is maybe part of why that is like the seeming like evergreen topic. I don't know. So here's why I wanted to hear what you thought. I absolutely hated 28 Years Later. I told you guys I watched it twice in the theater that same weekend because I was sure I'd done it wrong the first time. And I don't think I did. I think that's still a very flawed movie. Like, there's some really great moments. That fucking initial song is still a banger. But like, there's problems, right? And the Jimmys, to me, was like the big fuck you at the end. It's like, you waited this long for this and eat a dick. And I was very upset about that. And I know I've said it to people. I don't know if I said it on the thing. It's like, I kind of hope, assuming that this thing reaches fruition with like a full trilogy, somehow retroactively, I will hate this less. And I do think that is what happened for me. Now, if we're going to let's focus only on the Jimmys bit. And here's what I think I took from it that's a little different than the two of you, right? I agree, the idea of like sadism for sadism's sake sucks, right? And the idea of like, oh, this kid who was treated badly. It's like, but I think what they're doing in this movie for the Jimmys, which made me kind of turn the corner on them, is that you realize that like, okay, so if Jimmy, our main bad guy, right? Is that little kid that we saw in the intro of 28 Years Later, right? He was what, like figure eight, six? Yeah. And his whole family, the whole world gets torn apart in front of him, including his dad, who's the vicar of the local church, and they live in the rectory next door, right? He sees his dad get slaughtered by a bunch of things and then kind of become a thing and whatever. And so he's just broken, right? Trauma. I get that. It's a little overplayed, but I get that. I do think where this gets interesting is that it's not, to me, just this guy being a sadist, but when he sits down and talks to Ray Fiennes and he's like, he goes, okay, so are you old Nick? Like, there's general like confusion and I think genuine like,
yeah, like an adult who still believes in Santa Claus. Yeah,
basically. Yeah. Right. So he is still eight, right? Mm-hmm. In his head, he's still eight. And Ray Fiennes has that moment when he twigs to, oh, this guy's fucking insane. He's slaughtering people. And he thinks Satan is his dad. And Ray Fiennes has the moment, goes, and old Nick talks to you. And the guy taps his head and goes, all the time. So what you have is an insane amount of trauma beyond reality. And a schizoaffective person. He's not lying when he does all the things he's doing.
Yeah.
He's not doing it because he's a sadist. He truly is hearing the voice of Satan telling him what to do. So like, he's the son of Sam. It's not his fault. It's his consequence. It's, you know, like all this is still on him, but he is completely blown out of any hope of ever having a normal life at 8 years old, probably because at the time this would have happened, he probably wouldn't have gotten medicated properly. Also, zombies. So like, this dude has an impossible life. And the fact that I was able to like spend enough time sitting with those two, which again, I really think speaks to Ray Fiennes as a performer. And honestly, I forget his name, dude that plays Jimmy. The vulnerability he's able to show in that one scene actually impressed me. And so I went, oh shit, not only is this guy had the worst possible trauma you could give a kid, this is like, you know, watching both your parents get blown up in, you know, name your Middle Eastern war that the United States has done, but you also have mental illness on top of that. There's no hope for this guy. He's doing the only thing he can do. And I went, shit, that does make him kind of a viable character to me. Whether or not you choose to put a character like that in your thing, you could, yeah, whatever. But like, I do believe that that actually completes his motivational arc. Does that make sense or no?
Yeah, no, absolutely makes sense. And I would be much more into that, what you just laid out, if they didn't do the goddamn blonde hair and calling each other, everybody's called Jimmy and all that kind of stuff. Like, just, that was the part that was just like, that is just five decisions too many. Because what you just laid out makes a lot of sense, and like I think it's really solid, thing, but it's just all the extra shtick. It's just like, enough already.
And I think, like, the shtick is just part of, okay, you're eight, this is the thing, and ha ha ha, I am the director and writer, I remember this. Like, you're right, that's like an intellectual idea beyond this character, maybe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it just feels very, it feels very like just kind of a, there's a show to it, you know, like, what was that Paul Schrader movie that had Willem Dafoe in it, like, years ago? And like most of it's very Paul Schrader-y, and then there's like a couple of little decisions that get made, and you're like, all right.
Oh, like, Antichrist.
No, not Antichrist. It was one. No.
I just feel like if anyone ever says, like, you know that one Willem Dafoe movie, if you just say Antichrist, it will stop any conversation.
Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, we have to pause for a second for everyone to go, did you know that he had to have a prosthetic dick because they were worried that his dick was so big that it wouldn't look realistic?
Yep.
And boy, hashtag, that's something you gotta bring up every time you say it.
Dong Slater?
I was gonna say, it's like you would have to vibrate with a level of Roger Rabbit waiting for 2 bits, like, for the opportunity to throw that into a conversation at any time.
And Rule 43 says it exists.
It's like, when I said,
Josh, though, what do you, Josh, what do you think of that? Questions? That's fair. What do you think of that theory, Josh? I guess maybe it's just, I do think it's spelled out that, like, that is what that character is, but I could be wrong. Am I just like overinterpreting?
I think that that's who the character wants to present himself as. I just don't know if I believe him.
That's fair.
Because you can do a thing because you think it's the right thing to do, or because you're, you know, Satan tells you to, but Satan doesn't tell you to take joy in it. And he absolutely does. So I had trouble seeing him as anything other than just a completely immoral monster. And
I guess
so goddamn tiresome to watch. And I feel like he is also kind of the first draft of that character that I don't like it to begin with. So it's, to me, it was not very well realized, and it seemed kind of try hard to me.
Well, that's fair. What I mean about the blonde, kind of blonde hair, and everybody calling each other Jimmy and stuff. It's just those things, have a very kind of try hard vibe to it, where if you took all those layers off and just up the menace a bit, I think it becomes maybe more of an effective vehicle for that part of it. Like, the other Walking Dead related thing I was thinking of was from Fear the Walking Dead, where they went down to they're in Mexico.
I haven't watched that one yet. Yeah.
And that one, boy, I'll tell you, when we have more time at some point, I will lay out the way you're supposed to watch that, because there's a specific way to watch it.
Okay, now, like, I'm interested.
The order in which they presented is incorrect. But so anyway, like, there's a thing in that very early on, it doesn't give away anything, but some of the characters get to Mexico where they think they've got kind of a way to kind of stow, kind of wait out until the whole thing blows over type situation. They get to this very involved kind of series of houses and a mission, like a big mission building, all this kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, we're safe for right now. And then realizing something else going on, realizing that instead of killing the zombies, what these people have been doing is kind of recognizing who they are, gathering them up, and just sort of feeding them chickens and livestock and things, because eventually if they pray hard enough, they'll be able to fix it.
I've seen that done a couple times. Yeah.
And it's like, in Fear, it's so unbelievably, like, affecting, because it's like, it's not for show. It's not for profit. It's like this like held belief.
But the entrenched ingrained tragedy of it. Yeah.
You can't see what you're doing. It's the same way I look at is it Christian Scientist, the fuckers that don't do medicine?
Yep.
Yeah.
The LDS and the Christian Scientists. Yeah.
Yeah. The one.
They don't
do
blood transfusions and things. Yeah.
Yeah. The ones that indirectly killed a friend of Josh and I's because of their fucking
and
religion.
Their children for doing nothing.
And they're, yep, exactly. So it's just like, and so that, so when I think about something like this with the Jimmies and that kind of stuff, what you laid out, Matt, so well, that part of it, and I just think about things like the Whispers and Fear and regular Walking Dead, and I think about that mission sequence in Fear, and I just think, like, you can get at that type of thing in a less showy and big way and make it more menacing and dark by just stripping away some of that nonsense. You know, but I mean, but everybody's flavors.
No, I mean,
somebody maybe watch that and be like, just on board. They're like, it's like the Warriors, yeah, but like set in a zombie thing. Like, fuck yeah, you know. So
there are definitely people that think they were the coolest part of the first movie, and that Reddit pissed me off. Reddit continued to piss me off as people said that about the first one. I guess, to me at least, like what that portion of that, like if we consider the movie as kind of two things, right? There's like that, the Jimmies, and then there's sort of Samson and the Doctor. But to me, like the idea of the Jimmies was to show that, like, I guess. Okay, well this ties into the Doctor bit with Samson. Okay, so you have that, like, I was about to say come to Jesus moment and not mean it ironically, but you have that moment where Jimmy and the Doctor are talking and they're like, okay, well, see, my droogs, for lack of a better term, up there think you're old Nick. And he's like, the what now? And he's like, Satan. He's like, oh. He's like, I'm not, I'm Ian, I'm just a doctor. And you see Jimmy go, Doctor, and he already like has made the decision you're an atheist before the Doctor tells him. And you get to have, over the course of the next, like, what, 10 minutes, 15 minutes of the movie, a Satanist and an atheist argue morality and religion, and then the Satanist agree to performatively be the devil for the atheist performatively be the devil for the Satanist congregation, and yet find the way to morally exit the situation. And like, yes, of course that all works out. See, because I wrote a movie. Love
that bit.
And to that was fantastic. I love that. I love the idea that, because as in real life, the atheist knows the Bible better. So like,
yeah.
I was just like, yeah, dude, like, of course,
of all the things, he
take that moment and go, I can fix evil right now in this moment, even as an atheist, by quoting scripture. And he does it. And I'm like, again, I'm completely biased as an atheist. I always like it when the atheist wins because we're doing our best.
Yeah. And most of the time,
that to me was, again, another big moment where I was like, damn, this movie is taking
of Iron Maiden.
Because yeah, like this, like, movie is taking stupid things and trying to like find meaning in them, and like they kind of succeed for me. And I get
it. Well,
like,
yeah, I love that as a choice, because it's like fucking real sad. Before that, I just love Iron Maiden, but also like
Jesus, dude, just, that performance is awesome.
It's incredible. It's incredible. And it's like, and if you know anything about Bruce Dickinson, like he's this very well educated, very smart guy.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, and he's very philosophical and all the rest of that kind of stuff. So I just love that it's like, it's going to be a show. And it's like, and then, and I kept thinking, getting to the end of that whole scene, basically the last 30 minutes of the movie, I loved. It was like the last 30 minutes, yeah, from that point forward, I was like, oh, well, now they've woken up again. It's like, I really enjoyed the last like 20, 30 minutes of this movie. And it's like, and it, I swear to fucking God, if they have that same energy, the entire damn movie of pitching at that level, it's like, man, but it's like, it's, I just, it gets the end of it and it made me more annoyed, because I'm like, I love that last half hour. That's great.
All right. So Josh, like, then you didn't like the Jimmy part. So talk to me about the Samson and the Doctor in the Bone Temple. Like what did land for you?
My problem is that I'm afraid that the structure of this movie makes sense on a like a theme level, right? That we have the two plot lines that kind of mirror each other or oppose each other, and then they meet in the middle. And that is smart. Like it's smart. And at the same time, I just don't want a roving band of droogs in my zombie movie. It's like, this is smart and it's well thought out. I don't think it's particularly well executed, but I can't discount it. But I can say it's definitely not my preference. For the rest of it, I really liked what they were doing with Samson and the Doctor, and that whole slow process of trying to calm his mind. And he's doing science with Samson, and that was really cool, and trying to get back in touch with Samson's humanity. And then the fact that he succeeds is freaking great. Like, all of that is fascinating. And I just find myself mentally just skipping over the dumbass torture scene that was lifted wholesale from Birds of Prey, the emancipation of one fantabulous Harley Quinn. You know, like, it is so fucking page one. It's George Lucas going, how am I going to show that Anakin's turning evil? I know, he'll murder a bunch of school children. It's like, really? He's not going to just like steal a candy bar first? Like, no. Multiple child murder, and then he's just going to stick his lightsaber straight up Yoda's ass and then, well, hold on, we need him for the next one. But yeah, yeah. So it...
Prequel.
Like the second bit of this so much that it... I do find myself just skipping over the Jimmy shit, and I have no space for it. I fuck that, every bit of that, except that it brings them to those scenes at the end.
Yeah.
So do, if we want to kind of start to wrap up on this, we get Jim at the end.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I was like, fucking hell, that suddenly this movie has a lot more cheekbone.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
This movie is 16%.
Killian Murphy with
16%
Oppenheimer, cheekbone. I barely
Killian
know.
Killian Murphy is 15% of that. Yes.
It's like Killian Murphy with the White Cliffs of Dover on his head.
Yeah. So this also, though, made me think this is probably going to play better when they're all out. Because
I was thinking that same thing.
The first one really, really suffered. I thought from trying to set up Spike and the town and the doctor and the Jimmies and the whole, you know, like, I'll boil your mom's skull, son. We just fucking met.
Oh, that reminds me. Yeah. I thought it was great. We didn't see Dad at all.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, he's like there that, somewhere because like the way like, this one exists, ends too, it's right. Like we haven't really
but, like,
resolved.
He's in his village, but like, I was really glad we didn't do like 10 minutes twice showing Dad being like sad because I don't care. Yeah. Dad's a fuck off. Like, you know, so ooh, like that was actually kind of good.
Ooh, all of the Jimmy torture scenes could just be replaced with scenes of him searching for his son and finding zombies, fighting them.
Hmm.
I'd be there for that. I understand that that's very
awful.
Very jejune of me. But, you know.
No, I don't know. It's a weird beast. I think you're right, Josh. I think like this is like the kind of thing we sort of talked about maybe after the first one. We're like, dudes, if this is supposed to like all make sense in the fullness of time once we've seen all three, I'm a little annoyed that you're making me see three movies to make any of them pay off. But I do feel like this had a better payoff than the first. Or at least I liked yeah. The people maybe more. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
I also just kind of wish that it was on Apple TV as a 10-hour series.
Yeah, because I had that thought too.
Yeah, that might be the better move.
At this none point. Of this is paced like a movie. It's paced like a third of a movie or less.
Well, because like, and I know I keep going back to Walking Dead, but the other thing I kept thinking about was like, there's different things in Walking Dead where you introduce different kind of communities and stuff. You have like Oceanside and the Kingdom and stuff like that. And it's like, if it was a movie and not a series, you would have a 20-minute chunk of the movie that had to deal with Oceanside. And it's like you have a bunch of ladies who live there because all the men got killed and they fish. And it's like, that's fine. But it doesn't exist on its own. It exists as a component of a bunch of other places that also.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't hold the same weight unless.
Yeah, like so. As a movie, you encapsulate it in such a degree that you can't. There's nowhere to take it, and there's nothing to do with it. Versus as it relates to something in a larger, longer thing. And I kind of feel like this is the same kind of thing. Like to Josh's point, if it was a 10-hour series on Apple TV, you would have a thing. You would have a thing with the Jimmy's part of it, and like okay, and then we're also going to focus on somewhere else that there's somebody else that's trying to do medical shit and not succeeding, and you have some military kind of guys that are trying to do a military thing, and that's not working this way. So you have like different things that are relating to each other, but as a one movie, you have to kind of sandwich it all in there, and it's like. You know, so it's just sort of it becomes very scattery and like, and it's a killer because a lot of this movie just looks really fucking cool, and it has a good.
I do
look
think
it's
shot
it.
Well. Yeah,
it's, no, yeah,
it's shot well. The music's good. Yeah,
Well, it's got a good look to it, and I think Nina DaCosta's got a good sensibility about certain things. I mean, like, there's stuff in Candyman that works really, really well because she's got a great eye for stuff, and that's a really positive thing. It's just, from a story standpoint, it was just sort of like, it was like, let's take all the ideas, put them in a bag, and pick several, and then just kind of glue them together. And another one of our movies this week is going to be that way, with Mortuarian.
The Mortuarian.
Whereas, like, that one, I'm convinced is 7 or 8 movies in one movie. So we'll get to that one. But it's like, but that's so, like, this one had like, I love the last half hour from Ralph Fiennes' maiden performance on. Yeah. I just was like, I was in, I was dialed in, and I was like, this is solid. So, you know, like, there's a lot of it that I think is positive, but just as a whole, it's just like, I don't know, it's a real scattery thing. And it's so frustrating to have a zombie movie where they're like, oh yeah, every once in a while a zombie goes, blah, 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 and it's like, oh, that was it. All right, cool.
I wonder sometimes if we didn't learn that the comic book is the ideal zombie media format, because you can truly just let it go however long it needs to. You can control the pacing more. Like, there's something to be said for, like, I do think The Walking Dead works incredibly well as a comic. I think it works mostly pretty well and sometimes awesomely as a TV show. But, like, maybe that's the thing, is, like, if you want to try to, like, grind out the, what would you call it? I guess grind out, like, the drudgery of existence, as well as, like, the constant, like, life or death moments, like all these things that, like, I think need time to unfold. So maybe that's the deal, is like, it's tough to tell that story unless you're doing a single hook. You know, if you want to do Fido, or you want to do Warm Bodies, or you know, like those kind of things, right? Where you're just like, here's the hook, here's the zombie bit we're going to talk about, you know, or even fucking, what was the Catherine Newton one that we just watched a couple years ago?
Lisa Frankenstein?
Lisa Frankenstein, thank you, yes. Yeah. You know, like, have a hook and then you can kind of bypass some of this. But yeah, maybe you need more, I don't know, more build up for this. Anyway,
so ultimately, I do think this is a better movie than the first one. I think it is a lot more balanced because it only has the two storylines that are running parallel. And the first one had this, like, A, B, C, and then D kind of setup that didn't really work. So looking it up, I saw that Matt and I gave the first one a 4. Charlie gave the first one a 6. I think given that, I would give this one a 6. And then probably the trilogy is going to end up in the 6.5, 7 if that third movie's any good. Like, it's getting there. And I can see the shape of it, but I'm still like, I don't get why this meeting couldn't have been an email, you know?
Boy, have I stolen your line of this. Every meeting could have been an email or a bar fight. as a guy who's about to get in 2 bar fights tomorrow at work. Like, yeah. So I've been getting a lot of mileage out of that lately. Thank you. My turn. Bone Temple. This is doing, as I mentioned earlier, the thing I kind of wanted, which is retroactively making me kind of like the first movie a little more. I don't think I actually want to watch it, but it makes some of it more valuable in that it informs what I saw in this movie, which I liked more, if that makes sense. We'll see. They might shit the bed on the third. Maybe this will just be the thing that is just God's open E-string and I come forever. I don't know. But I think this one is... I don't know. I guess maybe my interpretation of the Jimmy thing being perhaps more tragic seems like too strong a word, but you know what I mean? Like, it's the idea that it is one of those things that is just, yes, the world failed him too, just in a very specific way. And that, I guess, I thought that was interesting. That might just be a personal thing. Who knows? So for me, I watched it for the 4th time for this episode. So I'm going to give it an 8. I'm going to say 8 out of 10. You're Rafe. It's fine.
Guys, it's Rafe. Yeah, a little too Rafe.
God. So I'm gonna, yeah, I guess I'll be the low man on the totem pole here. Like, I wasn't like actively angry. I was just sort of, the parts that frustrated me a lot, and then it was like the parts that I was like, oh yeah, this is all right, and I was really dialed in. So I think it's this very, very up and downy kind of a deal. So I think I'll go like just a hair over Schlitten. So I think I'll go 5.5 out of 10. I love that Ralph Fiennes is such a goddamn great actor that he can do the turn up to 11 line and have it not be, God bless him, but have it not be Jack Blackian. Like, oh, yeah. Just sort of say it in a sort of wistful kind of Wuthering Heights kind of way. it's like, God bless you and your immense acting talent. So let's say 5.5 out of 10. It's like, yeah, you could act your way out of a bone temple, which you can do.
That was one thing that I really liked is when he is putting on his record at the end of his long, hard day, the absolute locked in amber trope is it's a classical CD. You know, it's classical music, it's, you know,
Moonlight
Sonata or something. And he dances around while he thinks about the civilization that used to be. And in this one, it's Duran Duran.
Yeah.
It's like, yep. Thank you, because anything that he could have gotten his hands on in that situation would be precious.
Pop music.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be Brahms, you know? I thought that was great.
Yeah. No, for sure. I do think that he gets two musical numbers, really, in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think he excels in both.
Just a damn talent, that man.
Yeah, he's playing next to a pretty good giant dong, you know.
Listen, we forgot about Samson.
Not hard to act probably difficult to act across from something that floppy.
Yeah, I know, but I bear up under the pressure well. The question I had, though, real quick though, because we've already wrapped on this, we didn't talk much about Samson. So at Samson, the big alpha zombie from the first, reoccurs in this one, and Doc figures out how to give him his humanity back. There is a cure for the rage zombies. Is there a worse punishment for Samson than remembering everything?
If he remembers everything he did while a zombie, then yeah, that's awful.
Yeah, that's the part that that's the thing that hung me up on this. I was like, this is bad. He should not have any idea.
It's such a dark idea, because like they dealt with that in The Cured, that Irish movie The Cured, where it was like, literally, you won't remember. You won't remember. Like, oh, but if you do,
yeah.
And if you do, and it's like, holy shit! Like, it's just bleh.
So like, I'm curious to see if that plays into the third, because honestly, I don't. I'm not particularly interested in going that direction. I don't want it to be suddenly like Nuremberg of rage zombies, but that might be where they're going, considering now you can say there's an effect, or you can just go super, you know, American happy ending of like, hey, and we shoot everyone with a dart, and then now they're normal and huzzah, and hey, remember the time I ate your baby? Ah, it's bygones.
I want your baby back. Okay, stop it.
No, you've had him 4 times.
Okay, let's take a quick break then, and we'll come back and talk about our other two.
Yes, yes sir.
So next up, let's talk about the mortuary assistant, or el asistente del moratorio, you know, the mortuary assistant. This is a movie based on a game that I have not played, so I only had the movie itself to judge. I think that what happened is there was a guy, and in his grocery cart, he had a video game movie. And there was a guy, and in his grocery cart, he had an after-school special. And the two of them collided in the supermarket. And they're like, you got your after-school special in my video game. You got your video game in my after-school special. And we ended up with a movie that is trying to get across all of the lore of like an entire season of Buffy, so that it matches the video game, but is also determined to give us a really like a public service announcement metaphor for addiction. And to accomplish these feats, they have recruited a very talented lead actor and two AI robots.
Yep.
And those are the three people in the movie. So like, it, in case it's not clear, this didn't really resonate for me.
Nor I.
Yeah, and the tricky thing was is like, and I say this to make make fun, but also like in a more serious way. Like, I thought at times that I was losing my mind because I was like, "Is this the same fucking movie, or did I fall asleep and right. then it just started playing the next movie?" Because I've had that happen to me before, where I'm like, sure. "I'm watching."
Like, Gooby will fuck with you that way, where you're like, "I don't remember there being zombies at the end of Jaws."
Well, it was like, I remember I had that happen a couple months ago when I was watching, just finished it here recently, but I watched the crime series Vera, which with Brenda Bovlin, and it's just so lovely and great. And, but they're, you know, like every British crime series, they're very long, quote unquote, episodes. They're just movies, but they're basically boiled down to. And so I'll be stubborn at nighttime. I'm like, oh, I'll be able to get through this, and then I'll fall asleep. And then sometimes I'll wake up and it'll keep playing. So I'll wake up, I'm like, all bleary eyed, kind of confused. And I'm just like, which character? Where they were? There was also a stabbing. Like, I don't remember there being like, huh? I go good for a couple 3 minutes going, huh? And then we're like, oh, it's the next.
Why is Kelsey Grammer on this
thing? I was like, what the fuck's going on? And so like, so I had this happen like without losing consciousness watching this, like at least five or six times where I was like, wait, did I just hard blink? And then like something like, what am I? What? And I rewind back. No, I didn't miss anything. Like, okay. And I did it like five or six times watching this. And it's like, not even trying to be a wise guy. It was just like what is happening? Where like it's little vignettes where we're not introducing any new people necessarily or any new right. plot things. It's the same damn plot. It just suddenly becomes like she is. Like they're shot, it's shot different, and then like her behavior is different, and then something happens, and then like introduces another thing, and then it dials it back, and then it looks like an actual movie for about 15 minutes. Okay, that stops, and then we're gonna go to this other thing, and it's just like, and then drone on the shovel faced man, like it comes back and goes blah 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 blah, and he's like dropping all this knowledge and all this lore, and you're like, okay, all right, cool, let's go. And so it was just like, that was my experience watching this. It was just like this, like it was like. It was like getting on a roller coaster that only goes like straight and slow, where it like at certain points it goes tick 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 tick, and you're like, oh, is this gonna be a thing? Like, no, we're gonna continue to go straight,
and it's just like flat, yeah,
and it's just flat, and then you get to the end, you're like, yeah, that was the roller coaster. Like, what happened?
Sure was.
And so like that was the thing with this movie. I was like, just like it was six or seven movies, and like parts of it had a really good look and a really solid thing to it, and then they would just the style would change, the filming. Style would change, the characters would sort of change, and I was just like, what the fuck is happening? And so I just think, the whole damn time.
And a big part of that is early on we established that she's gonna have vivid just like diversions from reality and then snap back.
Yeah.
Because you have like she starts out in the 12-step program group, and that's like her character introduction, and that's another thing that I'm now that's on my mom died in a car crash list.
Yeah, I'm very over that.
For fuck's sake, yeah.
Hey, look, this person has an addiction, therefore everything in their life is unreliable. And it's like, cool.
I mean, worse when it's introducing that and then not being about that at all, just using it as like shorthand. And this one at least is heavy-handedly about that.
What's the equivalent of how mental illness was portrayed in the 80s, right? You were just crazy. Like,
you're
just addicted.
So we have the scene with her where she goes home and her sponsor comes to the door after she like wakes up and has lost time, and sponsor is talking about how she called and it was clear that she was using again, and she like demons out and kills her sponsor, and you go, oh, okay, now what? And now what is she fucking snaps back and her sponsor's at the door.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, well, fuck anything that happens to her, because it's not really going to happen until they decide it sticks. And then
was a maddening thing too. Yeah, that was, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was another thing. It was the inconsistency of what it was like, oh, dream state or not really happening, then actually happening, like was not consistent from a technical standpoint. So I was like, that made my fucking head hurt, because I was like, okay, well, so this just means this is really reality. And I was like, no, it doesn't mean it's reality. Like, well, God damn it, pick one.
Like, kind of made me yearn for the Black Phone 2 thing.
Yeah, where at least you know.
Yeah.
Which, again, I like more than anyone. But, like, yeah, it's here. Okay, so as the guy that has played at least some of this game, this game is scary as shit. Like, I truly, like, I've talked about this with coworkers and, like, Carr and Mo. Like, this is a game that I was like, oh, this has been on my to-do list. And when I saw they were making a movie, I made sure I, like, pulled the trigger, bought it, and started playing it. And, like, I would play for, like, a half an hour in the middle of the night, which is when I usually play video games. Like, between, like, midnight and 4 a.m. is when I do my gaming. And I would play for, like, a half hour and go, nope, I want to make sure that, like, the dogs are popping in and out of the room. I hear cars and stuff. Like, it's too scary to be here, the only person awake at this hour, maybe the only person left in the world. But, like, to me, the problem is like, okay, the setup is basically the same, but then you have essentially, like, kind of a string of Temu tool videos that kind of are supposed to creep you out, whereas, like, playing the game is the prime setup, which they don't even do very well in the movie, which upset me. But, like, okay, your job is be this mortuary assistant. It's your first night by yourself. Your boss has gone home. He's left you notes that tell you, make sure you do everything exactly by the book. And then when things go a little wrong, you have to find the tapes and it tells you more. But the way that plays out when you're playing the game is you're literally walking from one cabinet. You have to go grab the pack of the thing. You have to go over to the body. You have to cut the wrist. You have to stick the needle in. Like, it is very procedural. It's like Detroit Become Human. One of those, like, turn your mouse to turn the doorknob type things. Really, really granular, right? But what that does is make you really focus on what you're doing, because nothing happens unless you're actively looking, maybe using WASD, you know, moving your mouse, all that. And then a noise happens. And you're so concentrated that you go, huh? The way you would in real life. And you just sit for a second and wait to see if it happens again, and it doesn't. And eventually, though, you know, as these things build up, what happens is you've got a body that you're embalming. The hallway, much like in the movie, is like the hallway that goes, like, through into, like, the crematorium as well as the body storage. So let's say you're in, like, the main room where you're doing the embalming. In the game, you might be in that room, you know, at step 4 of 10, and the lights go out. And you go, okay, horror game, that's fine. And then lightning, yeah, okay, cool. And so you walk around in the dark, you walk around, you flick the lights on, and the lights go on. And what you can see, though, because you just, the angle you're at to hit the switch, is that all the way down the hall in that room with the crematorium, the body's now sitting up on the gurney. And then the lights go out again. And you fumble for a light. And then you hear, tip, 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 tip. And then when you fumble the light on, you see nothing. Now you're fucked, right? There's nowhere you want to go, as well as nowhere you want to be. Like, that's horror. And this movie never hits that. And the game hits that within the first half hour. And, like,
I was wondering
enough
about that.
It was enough to give me goosebumps and make me turn it off, close my laptop. And I went upstairs and Carr's like, the fuck? And I go, I'm too scared. And he goes, of what? Rightfully, you know? And I go, no, man. And I explained to him, he goes, well, I don't want to do that. I go, yeah, exactly. You know? And so, like, the game really, really worked. And I still think the game is, like, worth doing. It's wicked cheap, too. Like, I think that's great. But I do think this is another version of what? Blood Rain, Resident Evil, you know, pick any number. Where it's just like, God damn it. Like, someone bought the rights and they kind of made the movie they were going to make anyway, kind of like Hellraiser, right?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
And I'm not sure how big the development team was on the game, because, like, if that's a small team and they got a payday, good for them. You know, no fault. It's beyond your control. The movie they made was out of your control once you signed over the rights. I hope you got paid, because you probably didn't get paid a ton for making the game, right? So, like, good for you. I hope you made a payday, but I bet you're as disappointed as I am. And I feel like that's where I land, is, like, I bet this feels for them, like, the people that made this game, like, this is probably just as disappointing to them. And that's unfortunate, but, like, it is what it is.
Well, because that's the thing, is you can see in this, like, the parts that work, you can see where you could definitely get into what you just described about the game. You could see where that could be in there, but unfortunately, it just, it doesn't have...
They never seem to do it, though.
Yeah, right? And like, it even like in shots where, that's what I mean about the different styles. It was like,
because the autopsy where, like, of like, Jane Doe is the good version of this, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean, like, that's yeah. the one where you just like,
but like there's a blueprint.
Yeah, there's a way to do this, and like, you can bring in that stuff, and you can there's some things you can do with it. Even that kind of six films after dark thing, though, was autopsy.
Yeah. Six like, films that watch one, alone or something.
Yeah, that one where he kept falling over their own dicks half the time. But even then, they accidentally made some creepy moments in that one. I think that was a Wes Bentley or whatever. But regardless, like, they can, it's doable, and you can see where this would skirt around those edges. But like, even like that shot of the fucking body storage, they got that damn fisheye thing going on. Yeah, and it's like, and I kept expecting Anthony Kiedis to come prancing out. And I was like, so I'm not weirded out. I'm not creeped out by this. I'm just more annoyed.
And you were unable to give it away, so you were stuck just watching.
Well, and then also too, like, and I hate doing this, but like, once the lore starts coming into play, and you're like, oh, you have to put the thing on the chest, this, that, whatever else, and he's like, this is the thing you put on there. You do this thing, and blah 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 blah. And you look at this thing, and somebody worked on this thing. I understand that, but when they looking at the thing on the desk, I turn to Kristen and I go, look, it's a satanic tortilla warmer. And she looks up and went,
yeah. Well, it's a quesadilla press. And the thing is like,
and I feel like a dick, but I was just like, well,
no, but the thing is, you're not wrong. It's like, in the game, the idea of like finding the name of the demon is like based on like the kind of things you'll like, you have to literally examine the body and be like, okay, if they have a couple of spots on their neck and maybe they're like webbed toes, that's probably this demon. Like, these things matter, and they pay lip service to that. But it has none of the creepiness, because it is just literally like, okay, so here's the moon over my hammy and burn it. Like, you're just kind of done. And it's like, it mentions the things, but it doesn't do the things. And those aren't the same.
And it's never really clear what any of it means or is supposed to be.
Right.
It's it's explained so poorly. It's like,
just kind of like mom stuff.
So you need to... You got to light the strip of paper and walk around until you find the symbols of the different demons, and you put them all together in your tortilla press, and then you have the name of the demon. Bastardized
version of the game, yeah.
And then you like put it on the guy's chest and burn him, and then it's over. Except it's not, because look, I also have a girl in the basement in a coffin, and I'm getting her blood to act as a reagent, and so you got to use that, and then you got to add brown sugar and maple syrup, and just like this, it is weird because the video game, as you're describing it, is less video gamey than the way those scenes play out.
Yeah, for sure.
Because like, if somebody told me that you are just holding up the strip of paper and looking around for the demon symbols in a room, I would believe that for a game, because it's not very fraught. It's not very interesting watching someone do that.
Yeah.
Why would you put that in a movie?
It's one of those things of like, it just feels like, every now and then, right? There's just like, okay, a thing makes money, and there's just a glut of shitty mid to low budget movies that are sort of related. Right.
Yeah.
You know, Transmorphers or whatever.
Phenomenon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And so like, I feel like this is maybe like, I guess maybe this was probably greenlit around the time that like Last of Us was making like James Cameron money. And they're like, okay, buy up video game properties, just nail them down, make them ours. We'll figure out what to do later. And they were like, shit, this has been kicking around for like 2 years. Here's $20 million. Fuck off. Just, you know, it's a write-off if nothing else. And I feel like that's where this lands. And that's too bad, because I do think this game is really good and legitimately really scary. This just doesn't, it gives you nothing really of that game. Like, if you watch this movie and you're like, this is dumb, you might still love the game. I just don't, because they're so different. So it's a bummer, you know.
When you said the thing about scaring yourself with a game, I was reminded of way back yonder years where when over the summer, one of the years I was living, me and Steph, my friend Stefan, were living on campus, and I had the stereo equipment, and he had the gaming things, not surprising, that I would have all the stereo shit.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
But we connected all together, so you could listen to all these things. So we'd play like GoldenEye and stuff like that with like all the surround sound or whatever. But Dummy also allowed me to connect all the rest of the stuff together. So when he was at class, I would change his error message on the computer. So then it would like he'd hear a message go beep, beep, bloop, bloop. Like ah. But playing Resident Evil like in I think it might have been either one or two, must have been one. And there's the scene in Matt. You probably were more versed than Josh was probably with Resident Evil games, but like. The thing where you go down the hallway and you go down the subway thing and you come back up the subway thing, down the other pipes, you walk for forever. And you go down this little scaffolding that looks like all the other scaffolding, you go down the scaffolding, and then out pops a fucking crocodile. And it goes blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I went, whoop, and then up with the controller. This was pre-wireless controller. So up with the controller, and then down came the controller on my head.
Yeah, no, that's a good Matt Alley pucker moment.
Yeah, it's just like, and so when you were describing that, I was just like, I was remembering just like doing a quick swing of a PlayStation controller up in the air and then down on my own head. Yep. Yeah, that was pretty damn good.
What a time to be alive.
So yeah, no, I mean, I just like I don't hold any ill will towards these people for making this thing, and it's like so there's parts of it that do have a good look to them. I wish they would have settled on one particular movie. That they were going to make, or make the movie that you're describing in the game, because that would have been a lot more interesting and a lot darker, and I think a lot more compelling. I kept thinking of like, was it like take Autopsy of Jane Doe and combine them? Was it that Irish one, Dark Song? You know, the pagan one. Like combine those two things together.
Yeah, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. It's like it feels like again, you had the blueprint with Autopsy of Jane Doe, and like this would be a situation wherein I would say that like. Actually, no. I was about to say found footage would be okay. No, but just give me POV. If this entire movie is from this person's POV, so there's no reason to say, why are they still filming? Like, we're just right. Like Maniac, right? We're just watching out of their eyes. That, to me, gives you the vulnerability you need to make this movie work. That's why the game works. And
that's interesting.
So, like, yeah, it's a bummer. I don't know. I wish it was more. What do you guys think? Let's put a number on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would sit it at a 5. I think it's aggressively mid. It seems like it just... If they started with, we have this IP that we need to do something with, and they're like, okay, well, I'm just going to graft on the addiction screenplay I've been writing since freshman year of college and have not revised it since. It did not work for me. So 5 out of 10 for me.
By the way, if your sponsor behaves that way, you have a bad sponsor.
I was gonna say that's a whole other thing we don't have time for. I was as
someone with a little bit of experience, that's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, like
the fact that she never once goes, "Are you okay? You're clearly in shock." Like, come on.
Well, and on top of that, the dynamic with the group thing, I mean, like, as somebody, like, not to go into big confessional here, whatever else, as somebody who has been in an AA meeting before.
Me too.
It's like, it's not that. It's not that.
Yeah, TV rarely gets that right. There's that one Michael Keaton movie I feel like was pretty spot on. Yeah, and there's one with, wait, what? Batman?
Batman. I said Beetlejuice. Because we're so stupid.
Nope. I earned that. Over 20 years of addiction, I've earned that. But no. Michael Keaton has a really good movie about
Clean and Sober.
Yes, there you go. Clean and Sober.
I have that one on my shelf. Yeah,
it's fantastic. We watched that when I was in treatment. And there's one with, what's her name from The Net?
Sandra Bullock,
yeah.
And she 28 does one too. Days, which not a prequel to 28 Days Later, sadly. Yeah,
which is also plays it pretty fast and loose with parts of it, but parts of it are very accurate. We watched both of those while I was in treatment and critiqued them. Anyway, so for my money, man, I is it okay if I skew based on having known the source material?
I think that's
instead
okay.
To there no one are no in particular.
Gods but men.
Ah, good. See, I said that to no one in particular, hoping that you guys would chime in so that that would give permission. So, yeah, I'm bummed. Like, this, I really think this could work. And maybe someone will reinterpret it later, but for this version, 3. 3 out of 10. Just be creepy.
Yeah,
like you've done the work. You've done the work. You the entire thing is set in the bit where they do the interstitials in dead bodies. Like, you found the creepiest place. You are in the home of the John Carpenter mortician. You're his assistant creep. And they just don't. And that's a bummer.
Yeah. It's just when Josh said the thing a minute ago, it's just like the way the tone and inflection, my brain just immediately went, it's just like the Englishman who went up a hill but came down a mountain. I was like, what?
All that's right, a brain. Weird pull. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where the fuck. Good luck trying to figure that one out.
I got it.
And also, too, like when you're talking about, like, you know, like all the source material and like having a thing there that could really be a thing. It just, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's why I would always just dearly love if somebody who rules could make a Monkey Island movie. Like, I would love that.
Can you imagine?
But you have to have the right person, because it's just, okay. It has to be like Lord Miller level of
real
understanding
quick.
The difference. Oh, good.
Everybody, who would be your director for the Monkey Island movie?
Right. Man. Everyone in TV land.
No, I mean, right now.
Right, though, Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
I think
I might go Taika Waititi.
I don't know. I think he's gotten writer. Very proud
with a good
of
writer,
himself.
Yes. Or, honestly, do we...
Who did Spontaneous?
Oh, that's a good pull. And honestly, yeah,
Chris Landon.
In Austin? Chris Aaron Landon. And...
Oh, Aaron and Cam, yeah.
Honestly, those guys would get...
Aaron and Justin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
or the,
we're going to go, Benson and Hedges?
Benson and Moorhead.
Oh, sorry. That was more fun than I intended.
Full of flavor.
But like they're pulling off Daredevil pretty hard. That sounds weird.
I'll take the blame for that one.
Yeah, BT Dub Daredevil rules this season.
I haven't had a chance to start it yet. I just
buddy, you're
yeah. I know. Colin's been on my case like every fucking
Daredevil,
day
Invincible, The Boys from just debuted what today, yesterday.
From scares me. It's so good, and it's like, dog, God, I have to take stress break for that.
From
I know it's my
fault.
I know. But I had to do. I mean, truth be told, like there are times watching through where, especially that second part of the second season, where I was like, I would be watching at nighttime. I'd be like, nope, Charlie's gonna watch comedy now because I can't.
And I try to explain From to that just walk away.
it's a not insignificant
number. You just have to watch like
yeah. Once you're in there, it's just like yeah. My waist deep.
Like,
I am
five. Like just spend a night, and then you'll be like, oh shit, I can't do anything else. And
yeah, now you're fucked. Once you're in, you're fucked. It's just like, for this one, like, you know, I don't know. It's just like this is hearing Matt talk about the game. Like I don't know. It's just it's one of those things like. The creepy stuff is there. The material seems like it's there to really pull something out of it. It's like leading a horse to water and then fucking it kind of thing. It's just like no, you missed it. Like it's just sort of feel. So I would say four out of ten. I really love the old gods pagan section of Home Goods where you can get that little tortilla warmer with all the symbols on it. It's really ties the kitchen island together.
It's the to steal a joke. That's the beyond part of Bed Bath and Beyond.
Yeah. Jesus Christ!
The guy from the first season of Last Comic Standing.
As I always say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it call you daddy.
Oh, see, I've always said you can lead a horse to water, but a pencil must be led.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we can all just die in our dad joke fire.
Yeah, it's fine. Let's talk quickly about Thrash or Triage. This is a movie from Tommy Wirkola, who up to this point has provided many hours of entertainment. He's got like the Red Snow, Red Snow 2, and the your Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters kind of vibe. He's a weird guy and he makes weird movies for most of the time. This for me is just sub sci-fi channel garbage, man. I do not understand how this man made this movie.
Right. Because the three movies you just mentioned are awesome.
Yeah.
And this is not.
This one we have kind of dodgy effects, you know, kind of low budget. Water always looks weird, right? It's kind of powdery. And yeah, the sharks are kind of rubbery. That's where we're at. The people are either cliche or insufferable or both. Mm-hmm. Like, we have the girl whose mom died, of course. Mm-hmm. We're not sure how. Was it a car crash or a cancer of the car crash, something? So we get dead mom. We've got distant father figure in the form of Jimon Honsu, who is this is like
is that that guy Beethoven from Guardians?
Yeah, like he's a great actor, but
yeah, I know he's good. He yeah, he's given nothing to do here. Yeah.
We have the like shitty redneck couple who are screwing the government out of.
Is this the movie where the guy asked him if he ran back to his hut and grabbed his spear?
Yes, that's the one part of this movie I really like.
Jeez.
I thought that was so funny.
Really?
I thought that was hilarious.
Because then he gets to do the like, no, I live in Africa.
Okay, fair. Yeah, well, I was just like, yeah, no, that's fair. But I was just like, when they had the guy say that, I'm like, who the fuck is this guy?
Okay, yeah, that bit I like, but for the rest of it, there's just most of the people I hated being around. I hated having the like, there's the girl who's pregnant whose fiance just left her to be a professional poker player or some shit, and I don't care. And then there are bull sharks that get into the town because it's been flooded, and the guy
I will give them credit
driving,
for
hold
being
on, hold on now.
Oh, sorry. Yep.
Hold on. The guy who is driving the meat juice truck crashes the meat juice truck. So you can see why they're in a bad spot. And
have you not gone to Wisconsin?
God damn it. This movie does not wake up until 15 minutes before it's over for me. He said. So yeah, I did this.
I've been reflecting
one thing
on this.
Hold on. It took me two tries to get through it.
It took me
part of it was that I was trapped in a hotel with a TV that had the motion, true motion turned on, and you could not turn it off.
Is so there any less honest thing than true motion?
No, it's so false. So I ended up getting as far away from the TV as I could and taking off my glasses. And then it looks kind of like a movie. So not ideal circumstances, but Jesus Christ, this fucking thing.
I wonder if that had, you know, and I don't mean to be Mr. Snidey Pants. I wonder if that affected how you thought the water and the sharks looked. Cause like, I didn't think they looked bad. I thought it looked, I think for the look of it, I didn't think it looked that bad. So I'm wondering if that cockamamie nonsense played a role.
There were a lot scenes. Yeah. A lot of rough scenes. Like the Jurassic Park ripoff at the end just looks so bad. It reminded me of that shot in Dangerous Animals. At the end, the gnom. Yeah. Maybe you just can't do a good gnom.
I've been reflecting on this thing because, like, I really, like, I want to sound like I've lost my fucking mind. I generally enjoyed this because very early on I went, this is dumb as a, this is crazy as a barn full of clown pubes. Is that the Patton Oswalt?
I think that's, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, and so I'm like, well, that's what this is. And so I'm just going to, like, I'm going to sort of accept that that's what we are doing and that's what we're going to do. So really, the only thing that rose to the top that frustrated me was the damn dialogue. And I've been thinking about this and reflecting on this. I have a theory that, like, Workalo has this idea for this thing where this, like, this place gets isolated because of a levee break or whatever else, and it's in a bunch of brackish water kind of areas, and you can have these kind of things. Since bull sharks are of all the sharks,
I was impressed that they were correct that bull sharks could do that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, and like, that's the one thing in this I was really taken with was like, because, you know, in another lifetime, that would have been the direction I would have gone with oceanography. Like, I have a huge passion for ocean biology.
Yeah, in my current lifetime, that's where I went. Yeah.
And it's like the fact that they got the bull shark thing down pat, like, they're just dicks. Like, they're the biggest assholes.
Yeah.
All sharks.
That's
like
the shark to worry about. Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah. Like, they're bigger
it's
sharks.
It's not great white. It's not Mako. It's bull sharks.
No. Yeah. Like,
they might sharks, just be sharks, under your canoe right now.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Bull sharks were like, I'm bored. And like, bah. And like, that's part of their thing. They're fucking awful. So like, they got that.
Yeah. They're the chihuahua sharks.
And so I have this.
They're Jimmies.
So I had this theory that like Workla had this idea, had done some research, put some stuff anywhere else, and they're like, yeah, we want to kind of get this thing going. We get the chick from Bridgerton, the guy from Amistad, this will be great. And like, and this is what we'll do. And then they're like, okay, we'll keep working on this. And then they're like, we have a window of like 10 weeks in like a month. And it's like, oh. And so he had this thing, this frame, and then he was like, I got to write some dialogue real fast. And like, I speak multiple languages, English being one of them, but I'm just going to plow on through as quick as I can. And so they get the thing through, they put it together, they do the thing, and then it's like, nobody stopped to be like, did anybody read this dialogue out loud before we started doing this? And I sort of like, no, I don't believe so. So I just have this theory that this was like, it was an idea, and then boom, to being made. Like, that's my theory.
To be clear, I want to make sure we're all on the same page. Are you suggesting they were so concerned with whether or not they could that they didn't stop to think about whether or not they should?
I think that they needed a bigger boat, frankly. I don't know.
It hurts. So, yeah, is just Temu crawl, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing with this is that really it's like, it's just a disaster movie. And they're going to be very limited in what they can do. Yeah. And in that respect, like, I'm like, yeah, I'm on board. Like, yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. Like, yeah. Fun. And it's sort of like, but then you go, okay, well, Tommy's made some great fucking movies. You know, he made the Trip, and he made the Dead Snow movies. He made fucking Spermageddon, which I still can't believe exists.
Yeah.
And it's like, and so he's a creative, interesting, like, sharp dude. And so I just don't know if this was one of those things where it was like starting off as one thing. Like, it's that drawing, I'm sure you guys have seen this, where it's that drawing of like this really detailed drawing on the front end of the horse, and the back end is like one line drawing. It's like that. I think I really have this feeling that that's what this really amounted to.
Well, and also, like, literally no artist, regardless of discipline, is 1,000%, right?
Well, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so like, okay, like this is a dud. Okay, but like I would still watch the next thing. You know, so like, okay, cool, but like, bummer, I guess, is kind of my takeaway.
Yeah,
it's like
it's just weird to me that, like, I didn't feel like it got crazy, like Tommy Workla feeling just weird stuff for weird stuff's sake, which he does really well. I don't think we got any of that until 15 minutes before the end of the movie. When pregnant lady starts giving birth and he needle drops Vanessa Carlton 1,000 miles for no reason. And then like she gives birth while like free floating in flood water and the shitty kids set off a whole bunch of sticks of dynamite, like Wile E. Coyote style, and blow up all the sharks and get covered in shark goo. And like, suddenly this movie like goes, oh fuck. Yeah, that's right. Jesus. Was that today?
But well, and that's because right
until then, like, I was just like, fuck every one of these people individually and collectively. I don't give a fuck about you and your pregnancy, and you're like occasionally going, oh, that was a contraction, like fuck you, like anxiety girl with the dead mom, like fuck you, you're in 700 movies, and like shitty welfare parents, fuck you, like shitty welfare kids, why don't you talk like people? Is it all of it? Not having any of it.
Hear me out. As long as we're going cartoon logic, Clive Owen slides in chewing a carrot. He holds a gun. he just shoots every bull shark.
The baby in one hand, the shark in the gun in the other, and the sharks he's shooting.
Because this is the other movie besides Shoot 'Em Up that made me go, well, that baby's just dead, like 9 times over. Like, when they're holding the baby in the flood water. Yeah, it's in the water. I'm like, that baby has about 6 seconds before hypothermia just kills it. Like, and they're like looking at him like, boop, boop, and it's just bobbing. I'm like, no, that's a dead baby. So like, if they'd gone silly, that'd be kind of fun.
One, I'm really glad you said that, because like that would be my final, that was the other thing I'll say, was like, that is the one bummer of this, is that there's the great car sequence where the branch comes through and it kind of pins her in there, which I thought it was great, and there's some other bits that are whatever, but like you don't get a moment. Like, I think about in Dead Snow 2 where he tries to do the chest compressions on the kid.
Yeah.
And then just goes, and then or he throws him through the fucking bars. It's just unbelievably funny. The same thing is like the poor guy who keeps getting more and more destroyed as it's going along the whole thing. It's like it's a specific kind of humor, and it's like, and it's fun, and it's got a joy. It's a joyous macabre thing
it's
to it.
It's darkly funny. Yeah.
Yeah. And but like this one, he doesn't get the opportunity to come into it, you know? And like, that would be the one thing that like, you know, maybe it's because it's primarily American, even though they shot it in Australia, but like, it's a, you know, this is a American geared sort of thing. So it's like, maybe that's why you can't get away with that level of gleeful violence.
I mean, you do get a little of it with Redneck Dad, who gets his arm bit off and then comes back and then gets his half his ass bit off and then comes back. And he's just still doing the, like, you're not too big to go over my knee speech while he's bleeding out. Like, that's pretty fun, except like I just hate them all so much.
Yeah.
Like, I am absolutely willing to admit that my annoyance about the audiovisual situation was a thing. Because then I was like, well, I'll just watch it on my laptop. Fuck them. And turns out that this hotel didn't have good enough internet to stream a movie on my laptop.
Oh, ouch. Oh,
despite being like a travel hotel for business people.
Ouch.
You in a medieval Hamlet?
No, it was one of those like microtel, you know, like the hotels for extended stay people where they're just,
oh, like Florida.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they just didn't bother.
Everything's Ohio now? Internet. I don't know how the internet works. Is it Ohio?
the state we all make fun of. Oh.
Also where Slaughterhouse Princess resides. Yeah.
It's Delaware. This year it's Delaware.
Is it Delaware? Slaughterhouse Princess, you're now in Delaware. I can't wait to see how this unfolds.
Move your shit.
We're in Delaware.
I know that I'm gonna be the it's Wayne's World here, and it's not for any good reason. It's just sort of like I just had fun. This is one of those things where, and even while I was having fun, I was still frustrated with the clunk of the dialogue, and then just the lack of gleeful, you know, gleeful bloodiness that I know he's got the ability to do. So, like, you know, I said I still had fun, but it was like I will not lie and say that this is a well-written thing for a dialogue standpoint, because it absolutely is not. And it's like, and could this have been a lot more fun if it was less American? Like, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
I need a little less of like a sci-fi influence, like SYFY.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, a little Asylum. Yeah. Or Platinum
Bring in a little bit more of like, there was this one from 2015. I was just looking it up because I was trying to remember. There was this one, I just had it up in front of me 2 seconds ago. There was one from 2015 called The Wave. Okay, come on, computer. What the fuck are you doing? The Wave. There it goes.
Other things?
There was this movie from 2015 called The Wave, and it was it had the guy who plays the guy in the wheelchair keeps getting more and more destroyed in Dead Snow 2, and it's basically like it's essentially a disaster movie, and it was Norway's official submission for the Academy Awards, amazingly.
I remember that. Yeah,
and it was this, like, you know, like there's this family, their vacation, wherever else, and there's this huge wave thing that happens, and it's like that one is not like fun or funny necessarily, but they really get more like, whoa, shit, that car just crushed that guy, kind of level of like,
oh, so let's the not the deep impact versus the Armageddon. Where you see the actual fallout.
Let's not be so PG-13-y about it. And so, like, I think you can go, let's go that level and then bring in Workla's natural sense of morbid humor. And then I think you really can make a thing really pop. But as it stands, this rushed thing, especially when it comes to dialogue, like poor Jamon Hansu, man, like he's given everything he can to deliver this nonsense dialogue.
He's given nothing. Yeah.
But I just, so even though it makes it, even with that, like I just had fun with it, but it was just like, that was just, it's, you know, but I mean, am I going to see the next thing that he does? Oh yeah, absolutely. Of course.
There was that whole Roger Ebert thing after North where he just hated it so much. And he listed all of Rob Reiner's other movies and said, I say these as a charm against this one, that he will make good movies again. So yeah, Dead Snows 1 and 2 and The Trip, which, excited for that remake, by the way.
Yeah.
With Samara Weaving and Jason Segel.
That'll be fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, that should be fun. But yeah, I will say all those movies as charms against this one. And for me, it's like a, dude, it's like a 3.5 out of 10. I am never going anywhere near it again.
Yeah, I think, man, I guess the best I can say out of this is like, dude has entertained me in the past. And I hope that this made sure that like bills got paid and lights stayed on for whoever needed it. And that the next time they can do something maybe more interesting. I have no idea what the, you know, circumstances were, but like, great. You made a movie. It's your job. This one was just not fun. So for me, I guess partly because I have something to compare it to, this is like 2. Like this was just not fun. And it's slightly less bad than nothing, right? Like if a movie makes you feel nothing, like then it's like, that's the worst. This is just like just enough bad to be disappointing. And like, that's a bummer. So like, yeah, I don't know. Meh.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to be the unrealistically high person on totem pole here. And I'm going to say 5.5. I just like, I really did ultimately become like oh, I was entertained. It was dumb as a bag of hammers, but it was so entertaining. It was really just the dialogueness and the lack of gleefulness that sort of was a bummer. So but I still walk out the other day being like, oh, it's fun. So, you know, like I said, a very non everybody okay.
I bet that sounded like a whole marching band fell down a flight of stairs and it was just a single plastic bottle.
Two things can be true.
We'll fix it in posts.
Colin turned to me once. I was trying to like open something or do something, and I'm making it. You know, it's plastic making a bunch of noise. Whatever else, and he just turns and just goes, "Are you trying to like win a noise contest against yourself?"
Like, the fuck. Were you trying to open a cake saver, like one of those plastic like things from the supermarket?
Yeah. And he just. It's like you're trying to win a noise contest against yourself. Like, eh, fuck you, kid.
Look, if our goal in life is to always make sure that we are replaced by someone better, good job, buddy.
Yeah, I think we're all doing pretty well.
You've done succeed. I think we've all done okay. Yeah, good job. Yeah.
So did I say 5.5? Yeah, so did I say 5.5? Yeah,
five and a half.
Yeah, 5.5. 5.5 out of 10. Fine. Mm-hmm. Well, fine.
I think you mean 5.5 out of 10, you money-grubbing, one-armed, half-an-ass piece of shit.
Yes, because that is the cockadoodie car of dialogue that God bless that kid for trying.
I also wrote down, I'm going to need you to go down there, and I'm going to need you to measure how big the opening is.
Yes.
From the pregnant lady, because
that is
the like dilation of a cervix is something you could see from the outside.
Yep.
And well, when she goes, sure.
I don't think she gets that close. She's just like, oh, it looks
she's
like
at least arm's length away. And she goes, yeah. I'm pretty sure I see something. And I'm like, are you doing the Family Guy joke where like, it looks like your pussy's blowing a bubble? it's just the dumbest. Fuck! Oh God! All right.
It's like an echo with the thunder lighting. Like,
yeah.
Like hello.
I thought we'd have to drive out of here. Why'd you say it twice?
Now clap. A lot of jokes about big pussies, and not a lot of jokes about small dicks, and that feels wrong somehow.
Oh, I got a bunch. If you.
I know you have a bunch of small dicks. I just don't know why you collect them.
Thank you, sir. That is why I paused.
Okay, so we'll be back in a second, and then we'll be gone for a while.
That's true.
So next time we are going to give our brains a break, the parts of our brains that we use to come up with movies to watch. We're going to
finish. Or maybe break our brains.
Yeah, we're going to finish our little run through of the Friday the 13th movies, which I very much enjoyed. So we are just going to take on all 4 of them. And if we have to record a few days later to cover them, that's fine. So we're talking Friday 7, Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday, otherwise known as Friday 8. No, wait, Friday 7. 8 is Manhattan.
8 is Manhattan.
9 is yeah. Final Friday. And then X is Jason X. Spacing. So,
oh, are we going to do happening. Freddy versus Jason?
It's so bad.
It is, but I'm just saying, if we want to make sure we put a nail in this, we could do that as well.
And then anything, I think what we ought to do is save that for when we have two prestige movies.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like the kind of promise I never have to fulfill, which is my favorite kind of promise.
If anything, if we all have right. time, we can call an audible on it, but we could watch the Platinum Dunes one and see, oh, no. like having seen all the of them remake? Recently, how we feel about it. Yeah.
Oh, you do you remember that one, don't you?
Didn't we watch that together at the theater with Dunn?
No, that was Elm Street.
Oh, that was Elm Street. You're right.
Yeah, it was dire enough as it was. So maybe, but definitely 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yep, you know, let's do it.
It's funny that the one that starts, that Jason versus basically a mutant, like a Professor X mutant, is the least, well, like the least frequently discussed one. So we're going to right some wrongs. So watch those along with us. And I have been Josh this entire time, and I'll say a bheh.
Hey, we will have a short this week, which is called Charlie.
No, it's not.
Sorry, the short's not called Charlie. Charlie, tell them what the short's called.
Oh, the short is called Dead Grandma, and it's a minute and 21 seconds long, and I have not stopped thinking about this motherfucker for 2 weeks now, and so it's a real knee slapper, and and if you're having a good day and you want to ruin that, give this.
So
a go.
Are we talking like if you thought that like the coffee table was too funny, you should watch this?
Yeah, that's in that, you know, or like remember Australian short Caravan? You remember that one? Remember mm-hmm. how being go lucky that was?
It's like, yeah. So this vein. Short is When Evil Lurks. Okay, got you.
Yeah, it's a happy fun time. So, okay, but it's cool. it's fucking good. But
so. For my usual sign off, then, I Charlie told you the short. I will say, for once, I am not to blame, and I hope it's awesome. And as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other, and then we'll talk towards you here relatively soon. But be good. We'll talk to you later. Bye bye.
The last bastion of journalism in this country.
Oh man, it'll be us. Like, with it'll be Danny, Donnie, Joe, John, Jordan, whatever the new kids are, and then us. Just be like with a sticker that's like shows that the price has been marked down right over my face. I feel like that'll be how we know.
I'm on a magazine.
Yeah, you know, like Moe's calendar.
Yeah, kind of Mike Wazowski style.
Yeah, for sure.
My brain is going weird places. I just saw.
I didn't realize that Monsters, Inc. made that same joke that The Simpsons made.
Mike Wazowski style. Right. Oh, sexy lady.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I mean, broken container. Similar. Yeah, similar look, I guess. No?
Those dudes have similar style, yes.
That one guy just has the one eye, yeah?
Yeah, sure.
What's the thing about Mike Wazowski? Does he wink or blink?
Oh, jeez.
Well, see, this is where the hard questions get asked. One of my video game podcasts, Get Played, got to interview everybody in the Mario movie for whatever reason. Hmm. They got flown out to Japan, and they're like a nothing podcast. They were surprised, too. And I think it's because one of them met Kojima earlier, and therefore they got like on a list. But so they're interviewing Danny Glover, right? That's the young one. Donald Glover's the old
one. Donald Glover.
Yeah, so they're interviewing Danny Glover, who's the voice of Yoshi for Super Mario Galaxy movie. And so their first like hard-hitting question is, so does Yoshi have one big eye with a crease or two eyes? And it's like, yes, asking the hard-hitting questions.
The Sonic conundrum, yes.
It's so good.